Golf Smarter Premium, number 474, published on February 3, 2015. Simple tools to breaking 100, 90, or 80 with Josh Willard.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Josh.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me here today.
Thanks for coming into the studio. This is great. We met just a few weeks ago out on the driving range over at Peacock Gap.
That's correct, yeah.
And you're teaching there now, or what's
That's
going
right,
on over
yeah.
there?
I actually work at Peacock Gap 5 days a week, and I work another day down in Alameda at Chuckarica Golf Complex.
Okay. All right. I can tell you by your accent, you're local.
That's right, yeah. No, I'm originally
from... not local to Marin County.
No, I'm originally from Sydney, Australia, and been in the U.S. for about 4 years now.
Okay, and what brought you here? Why'd you leave?
Before I came to America, I was actually working in Austria, in Linz. And before that, I was working in Singapore for 3 years. And then before that, I played on the tour for about 8 years.
Which tour?
I've had status on the Australasian tour, on the Asian tour, and also on the South African tour.
Really? Mm-hmm. Really? And what are the differences between each tour? Is it just another level up, or...?
I think with those three tours, maybe the Asian tour possibly slightly stronger because there's more events, there's a bit more money. The Australian tour, or the Australasian tour as it's known, they've lost quite a few events compared to, say, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But they're all really sort of tours that get the guys a starting tour to get you onto the PGA Tour or to get you onto the European Tour.
And... you obviously left Australia a while ago.
That's right. I left about 13 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And this was to pursue a career in professional golf?
Yeah. I played for 8 years. Before that, I was actually an apprentice golf pro. I got my PGA status in Australia, my Class A status. And then, like most guys, when they're sort of 21, 22, when you finish your Class A, you want to go try and play golf professionally. So I did that for about 8 years, and then I got to around 29, and I figured that I sort of wasn't working out how I hoped it would, and I had to pursue something else. So I really enjoyed teaching, so I thought I'd go down that route, yeah.
Very different skill set, teaching than being a player.
Definitely. I guess with...
because of being a player, you're in your own head, right?
That's true.
And teacher, you've got to bring it out.
That's
you've got to
exactly
be able
right,
to articulate
yeah.
it.
Absolutely.
So what is the hardest part to make that transition?
I guess just trying to get the knowledge on how to instruct people, how to get people better. And I guess that just takes time. You sort of, like any skill, you've got to develop it over years. And I guess I've been doing this for now 13 years, so I feel like I'm getting better every year at it. And, communicating and just getting people to improve.
How are you able to translate your thoughts into instruction? I mean, you were probably a natural player growing up. You just immediately were starting to play really well when you were a kid and fell in love with the game.
Yeah, I think I was introduced to the game through my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And in Australia, when I was a kid, you couldn't join a golf club till you were 14. You could still get onto the public golf courses and play. But if you wanted to join like a golf club, you had to be at least 14 to start.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So being a strong player as a kid and wanting to succeed and then going to the different tours and then going into teaching, to me, it's natural players are not necessarily the best instructors. I've always thought like the best teachers were the C students, not the A+ students, because the A students, it comes naturally to them. It's easy. And they don't understand how people struggle with whatever they're teaching. So do you get frustrated when you're instructing and people just aren't getting what you're trying to, you're trying to teach them because you think it's so obvious?
Well, I guess as an instructor, you have to have some patience. You know,
yeah.
You're dealing with people that maybe play golf once a week or once a month or once a year, or they're just starting up. But as far as the instruction's concerned, I really feel that you've got to keep it really simple. And for people to get better, I just feel that you've just got to keep it really basic. And to me, the way that the tour players play, They've got maybe more floor. You know, they've got a lot of compensations in their swings, and they can make that work. Mm-hmm. But for the average person, for me, they need something simpler. You know, they need to have less motion to it all to make it repeat.
That's an interesting idea. Is how the pro players, the better players, can adjust from shot to shot on their swing, and yet the amateur has to really learn how to have a swing. And then you go out on the course, and these guys who are struggling to break 90 are going, "Oh, I knew what I did wrong then," or, "Yeah, I got to shape this one around the tree." It's like, really, you have that shot in your bag? Really? Really? Come on, really?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess for the professionals, they obviously got more time to work at it. They're a lot more talented, really. They're a lot more athletic than, say, the average person. Whereas the average guy, just, I guess he's out there to try and have some fun, and you know, he's going to be a little more all over the place, I guess, as far as, you know, off the tee, and he's going to have to try and create shots to get the ball back into play.
Yeah,
and that's why I guess golf's so difficult, you know.
Yeah. What is the so let's talk about your instruction a bit. What do you like to focus on with, let's say, somebody who's been playing the game for a while? They're struggling, and they don't know what it is that's preventing them from breaking 90.
Right.
You know, they're in the upper 90s. They're occasionally in the bad round. They're in the low hundreds, but they're mid and upper 90s, and they just can't get down to 90. And if they break 90, that would be a major event in their golfing career.
Yeah, well, I feel that with most people, you know, probably their short game lets them down a little bit. They, you know, if a lot of people, when most people come for lessons, what I find is they want to learn how to hit the long shots, the long game. And then when you talk to them about their game, and if they come consistently, you sort of say, well, are you spending any time on your short game? And most of the time the answer is no, not really. But, you know, other people, they can come and, you know, they sort of chip and putt okay, but their long game's rotten, you know. So it just depends on the individual. But I find, you know, normally if their long game's rotten, if you can sort of fix up their long game a bit as well, they can drop, you know, quite a few shots. Just depends on the individual, I guess.
Long game being off the tee?
Well, just in general, when you've got a long, you know, the long game as far as the consistency of it, you know, most people tend to fight the right side of the golf course for the right-hander. And I think a lot of that just stems from the starts and their concepts of where the power comes from.
Let me take you on that right there, and let's expand on that. What does that mean?
Well, you know, for I guess the way the game's traditionally been taught is that, you know, if, you know, here in the US we've got the Golf Channel, and that's sort of like the new and YouTube, I guess, and that's like the new golf magazines. You know, the golf magazines screwed, I feel, sort of have messed people up a bit for a long time. But you know, the way the game's traditionally been taught is that, you know, you've got to get yourself over the ball, get yourself comfortable, and then try and make this massive big turn. And for most people, when they try and the more they try and turn, the more out of position they get. And then once they're out of position, they're trying to recover to get back into the right position so they can hit the ball. And the problem with golf is we don't have a lot of time. You know, the club's traveling at 70 to 100 miles an hour, and you don't have a lot of time to try and match it all up and hit the ball straight. And that's why I feel that a lot of people struggle with it.
Off the tee, bigger problem, the swing or the club selection?
Well, I think if people were a little more conservative with the selection, you know, I mean, of course, some, you know, depends on the course, but people tend to gravitate towards the driver, and they feel like that's the fun club to hit. But, you know, a lot of the times they just...
Really? That's fun? That's not fun.
Well,
it's nerve-wracking.
I guess it all ends in tears a lot of the time. But, you know, if they sort of maybe went towards like a 3-wood or a 5-wood or even a hybrid off the tee and sacrificed a little bit of distance, sort of their strategy was a little better and just got the ball into play and sacrificed the 20 or 30 yards, you know, okay, they might have a longer second shot, but they probably find that they're playing the ball more off the short grass than in the rough and in the trees.
Absolutely. And then they get themselves into the rough and into the trees going, oh, I can get there from here.
Yeah, well, they're just unrealistic. You know, when they get the ball out of position, then they're trying to get it back into position. And, you know, most people, they're playing a shot that's really, they might pull off 10% of the time. Instead of sort of just taking their medicine and chopping the ball back out onto the fairway.
Well, that's interesting. You call it taking your medicine and getting back in the fairway. And yet, it took me a while to realize, but once I started figuring out if I, quote unquote, took my medicine and just put the ball back in the fairway, get it into play, I can get the next shot onto the green. Okay, now I'm putting. If I two putt, I bogey the hole. All right. So, but if I see a slight opening, I'm over on the side there, on the right, I'm in between trees and the rough, and there's a tall tree in front of the green, and there's a bunker in front of the green as well. I mean, there's all these things that are in my way, but I think, but it's only 130 yards. I can reach that, right? But yeah. There's all these obstacles in the way. And I go for it, and of course I hit a tree, then I have to go under another one, then I'm in the bunker. Now all of a sudden I'm putting for a seven. You know, if I two putt, it takes me five strokes. Where are we not thinking it through of like, what are the consequences here?
Oh, definitely. I feel that, if you looked at that situation, say like if you were going to invest money, you know, you wouldn't put your money into something that you feel like you're going to get a 10% chance of making money out of, would you? You know, you'd definitely be a little more conservative with the way you think. But, you know, I guess maybe that's the attraction with golf. You're feeling that, you know, you watch golf on TV, you see Phil Mickelson play and he's sort of all over the place and he hits this miraculous shot. So we all feel that we can do that, you know, and obviously that's fun when it comes off. But when it doesn't come off, then, then we look a bit silly and we rack up a big number.
Big number, again and again and again. I love to emphasize getting fitted for clubs. I know that when I got fitted for my driver, it really made a big difference in the game because I started finding out that by hitting more fairways, I'm definitely in position for more pars. Whether I have to chip up, you know, close to the pin and try to putt in one, or I'm on the green in regulation, it really does make a huge difference when you're playing from the fairway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, golf's much easier off the shorter grass than when you're in the rough. And like you said about getting fitted for the driver, people tend to have generally need a lot more loft on their driver than what they've got. You know, people like to, maybe it's a bit of a macho thing, but people like to have like a 9 or 10 degree driver, whereas I feel if people had more like an 11 or 12 degree driver, okay, if they really had a good one, it may not go as far, but it takes a bit more spin off the ball, or actually takes a side spin off the ball. Ball goes a bit more up in the air. It's a bit easier to hit. It's easier to get the ball into play.
We've already mentioned a couple times of hitting it far, mm-hmm. hitting it far, which seems to be the great lure. We did an episode a couple years ago that we called Give Me 10 Feet Closer Than 10 Yards Farther Any Day of the Week.
Right.
Are we putting the – what is that attraction of watching a ball fly in the air for as long as we can and not realizing and not analyzing at the end of the round? It's like, wow, that really was awful. I hit my driver 12 times today or 14 times today, and I only made two fairways. This isn't good.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the way the game's going, isn't it? It's all about power, whether you're talking about golf or tennis or any of those other sports. It's you know, the guys are hitting the ball further and –
only the guys on tour.
Well, that's true. But we see the guys on tour. They're the guys that are driving the whole business, right?
And, well, are they driving it into the ground with that? You know, they were making once there was this boom of golf course construction going on in the country in the early part of this century, right? And now nothing's being built in this country because they were making them longer and longer and longer. And that only appeals to a handful of select players.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think the courses are getting too long. You know, if people played off the right tees, you know, Nicholas had a thing out a couple of months ago, maybe 6 months ago, where he talked about, you know, I saw an ad on television here in the States, and he was talking about play from the tees that fit you. And for a lot of people, they tend to want to play from the back tees, but I think they'd have a lot more fun if they sort of moved up and played more off the members' tees or off, you know, the forward tees. I mean, some golf courses have like a senior tee or have like a members' tee, but people tend to gravitate towards the back tees.
We've got to stop giving those tees names because that's part of the stigma that I'm not playing the ladies' tees. They're not. They're red.
Yeah, and like, that's right.
Well, they're just the red tees, and they're, you know, and I keep going back, and I have this conversation with my friends all the time when we're out playing. It's like, are you here to score as low as you possibly can? Then why not play up a little closer? What's the big deal?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, if you, you know,
you're
if
not a scratch golfer, friends.
That's right. You know, if you if you're hitting like an 8 or a 9 iron in instead of a 5 iron, it's got to be a lot more fun, and it's going to be more scoreable. And if it's more scoreable, you're going to want to play more. So you know, you're having more fun if you're shooting lower scores.
I'd much rather hit an 8 or a 9 iron than a 5 or a 6 any day of the week on my second shot.
Yeah, I'll go for that as well.
Yeah, I just have a lot more confidence in that shot. I keep working on the 5 and the 6, and then I get out there and it's like, no, this is. I'm feeling shaky about this. This is not good.
No, definitely. You know, like that's probably the biggest criticism with a lot of people is the new golf courses that they are building, they're tending to get longer and longer and longer. And, you know, we're struggling to get people to come to golf. And, you know, if they can make it a little bit easier by making it a little bit shorter, I think, it, you know, you probably keep a lot more people.
The other thing that's it seems to be so obvious is that people really don't know the distance they hit each club. They have an idea of what they've hit on the longest shot they've ever had with that club and use that as the standard. But that, I think, creates more problems than people are willing to admit.
Well, people
tend to
exaggerate.
That sense when you're talking to
students?
Yeah,
well, you know, when you talk to people, say, how far did you hit a 7 iron? And they say, well, I hit 170 yards. Well,
no, you don't.
Well, maybe if you hit your absolute best one,
downhill,
it goes that far,
with the
right?
Rim behind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a firm like a runway, but... And yeah, it's you've got a 50-mile-an-hour wind behind you, like you said. But you know, people probably the best tip you can give anyone is just take an extra club. You know, people tend to always under club. You know, especially if you play a lot of pro ams in my day. And the biggest thing is they're always under clubbing.
Mm-hmm. Take an extra club. Let's talk about your short game intensive sessions that you offer. Walk me through that. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, I do them up at Peacock Gap and down in Alameda, and basically it lasts for about 3 hours. And what we try and do is we cover all facets. We try and cover the putting, the chipping, pitching, bunker shots. And that's really when people come, they can really pick up shots quite quickly there.
Pick up strokes or knock down on your score.
Exactly. Because, you know, a lot of the time they've just got the wrong concepts of with which club to use and which situation. And for your listeners out there, probably your best tip you can give people is try and keep the ball on the ground. You know, the club that people tend to gravitate towards is the sand wedge and the lob wedge. And I just find with those clubs, they're great in some situations, but when people pull them out in every situation, that's when it gets a little trickier. You know, firstly, you've got to hit the ball quite precisely, and then if you've hit it precisely, then you've got to land the ball precisely as well. So if you can pull a 7 or an 8 iron out and just try and run the ball along the ground, you know, it's still going to fly a little bit, but it might fly maybe, you know, depending on the situation, it might fly 20% through the air and 80% along the ground, you know. And, you know, you can mishit it there a little bit more with a 7 or an 8 iron, and the ball's going to want to release up to the hole.
Yeah, let's pretend we're here now. Peacock Gap is a good example because it's a short game specific kind of course. I mean, it's not a long course, but if you don't have a good short game, you're going to struggle on that course.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got a new greenkeeper in there at the moment, and the last few months he's really turned it around.
Yeah, I heard you got him. You got him up from the Meadow Club, which is quite the coup, right?
That's right. He was the number two up there, and
wow.
He's come down and he's really sped the greens up.
Yep.
He's lowering the fairways a little bit as well. And I think once the summer comes around, it gets a little warmer, it's going to be a lot more playable.
It's in great shape right now.
It is. He's really turned it around. And like you said, the golf course itself, it's a fun golf course to play. It's not a long golf course, but it's nice and flat. It's easy to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said before, you're going to have a lot of 8, 9 pitching wedges into the hole. So it's quite scoreable. You can sort of, the greens are a little tricky maybe, but you know, that sort of balances it out as far as, you know, that's the thing I like about it. It's not very long, but then it's a bit of a challenge once you get around the greens.
The other thing that's nice about playing Peacock is there's not a lot of uphill, downhill lies, you know, the ball being above or below your feet.
That's right. You get it's a pretty flat golf course to play.
Yeah, it is. That helps a lot. Let's say, okay, we're on a par 4. Our second shot leaves us 4 yards off the green, but we're in the rough. It's not the false front leading up to the green. We're in the rough there. There's nothing between us and the green itself except the tall grass. And I see more and more people reaching in for what you were saying is the pitch and the 60 degree, and they try to scoop under it and give it a nice loft onto it, and they're not that precise. And that, why don't we understand? Why don't we get that? And for me, what I would do in a situation like that is I would take maybe a 7 or an 8 iron and just putt with it. So if I do a putting motion, it's just going to get over that rough, going to get through and over it, but then it's going to roll.
That's exactly what you're talking about. It just depends on where the pin's located. But if you've got if you've got a little bit of room to work with, definitely pull out your 9, your 8, your 7 iron. Like you said, almost feel like it's a big putting stroke. But the difference is you're just going to hit down on a little bit more. Ball's going to come out a little flatter. It's going to release up to the hole. And, you know, it's just a more high percentage shot, you know, than pulling out. Maybe people tend to gravitate towards the sand wedge or the lob wedge.
And you said hitting down on it versus trying to scoop it up, I guess.
Well, it depends on the lie as well. That's the other thing with it. But, you know, if the ball's sort of sitting okay, you know, just sort of make sure you hit down on a little bit with the chip shots. People tend to sort of try and help them up a little bit.
And where's the weight on our body? Are we leaning into it or are we holding a little back?
My preference is, depending on the situation, but normally I try and get people pretty level. I just feel that if they're a little more level, they tend to sort of brush it off, but it just depends on the severity of the lie. If it's down deep, you know, if it's down deep, maybe you want to lean a touch more foot towards the left side for the right-hander. And feel like you're going to hit down on it because you sort of got to get sort of chop it out and get the ball up onto the green. That's sort of the direction I try and do with most people anyway.
What do you find to be not the easiest shot to teach, but the easiest shot for your student to comprehend and like the light bulb goes, I get it now. That makes sense to me and I can do it. What type of shot do you find that works for most of your students?
Well, I guess the short game, you can get the most pop. You can get people, you can fix them the quickest with the short game. You know, whether it's like we were talking about before, pulling out the sand wedge and you sort of give them a 7 or 8 iron and say, you know, try this, drop a few balls down, try this. You can really, you know, I get people I teach and then they come back and they say, well, you know, that tip you gave me with the 7 or 8 iron's fantastic, you know, I'm saving so many shots, you know. Before I was like sculling, hitting the ball thin with a sand wedge and it's going across the other side of the green. Now if I miss hit it with the 7 iron, it's not so exaggerated as far as when it, you know.
Oh, you said the magic word, sculling. Okay, so you've just won the prize. As we're recording this, the Waste Management Phoenix Open is going on, and yesterday, the opening day of the tournament, Tiger makes his triumphant return. Well, the media wanted it to be a triumphant return. He obviously was looking, a little bit stale. But his, not that I want to talk about his score or anything, but his play around the green looked more like someone shooting in the 90s.
Yeah, well, you know, he's interesting to watch, wasn't he? You know, he's it's almost like he's got the yips with his chipping. He was trying to keep a lot of the situations he was in, he was trying to keep the ball low, keeping it on the ground. How you would try and get a guy that's shooting sort of between 100 and sort of trying to break that magical 90 number. He was pulling out like a 7 and a 9 or an 8 or whatever it was, and you could see he was trying to get it on the ground quite quickly. And, you know, somebody who's struggling with the chipping, that's sort of a lot of the time how they'll try and play the shots.
Yeah, he came up short, he sculled one and just rolled right over the other side of the green. It was really quite, I mean, once, okay, he's stale once, but he did it multiple times.
We saw back at the Tiger Challenge in December that he was really fighting his short game, his chipping. Now, whether that's just something because he's trying to change his swing and, or it's something more sinister as far as, you know, he's sort of getting to that age. You know, on the tour, they call golf, once you hit 40, they call it the black hole for most guys. You know, their game tends to sort of deteriorate and sort of not be as sharp as what it was before that.
Well, he hit that a long time ago, it feels like.
Well, yeah, he hasn't sort of, the Thanksgiving incident, I guess his game hasn't been the same since.
No, no. This is a game we like to play here a lot. If Tiger called you, I mean, he seems to be trying lots of coaching.
Right.
He's on another coach again. If Tiger were to call you and say, I need your help this week, what would you talk to him about?
Well, you know, it's a tough one. You know, Tiger's obviously, he's probably the most talented guy that's maybe ever played the game of golf. So, What would I do with him? Yeah, that's a really good question.
I'm not going to let you get away with being stumped on this one.
It is.
It's interesting.
Well, you know, he's always had the club a bit stuck and behind him, you know. So
explain.
Well, you know, for most of the amateurs, they tend to come too much from the outside and they come over the top and they take big divots. With Tiger, and you're going to find with the better players, they tend to get the club more caught behind them. So it's sort of the club's coming too much from behind their body. And, you know, that's why he's always sort of blocked it, especially with the driver, he's always struggled to hit the ball straight. You know, at this point in time, for me, he's got too much turn too quickly. And that's sort of a little bit of his old patterns with what he was doing. He's working with Sean Foley, and the more sort of stack and tilt or the golf machine stuff or whatever you want to call it. And he's sort of going away from that. It seems like he's going more back towards, you know, his older swings when he was sort of back in the 2000s, 2001. You know, I'd sort of just work on the direction of his turn. I feel like he's got a lot of turn, like I said, a lot of turn really early.
Mm. And he's so flexible. He's so strong.
Oh, he's very athletic, isn't he? You know, he can do, he can, as we've all seen, he does some amazing things with a golf ball.
Yeah, he really does. Another thing that you offer, at least on your website, which is joshwillardgolf.com, W-I-L-L-A-R-D, correct?
Yeah.
joshwillardgolf.com if you want to check it out. If you know, you can give him a call, talk to him on the phone, or you can even book a lesson with Josh. You talk about on-course lessons. In addition to, you know, private lessons, short game, on course, and one day golf schools, on course lessons, what do you find the most common mistakes when you're on course lessons with let's talk about that mid handicap upper 80s 90s player?
Yeah, just course management, like we talked about before. I just find that you know, people are sort of grabbing the driver every chance they can. But, you know, to me, if they pulled out a 5-wood or a 3-wood and just sort of sacrificed a little bit of distance but got the ball into play, and then also around the greens, you know, they're just their course management isn't very good. You know, they'll, like I said before, they'll tend to go for shots that maybe it's a 10% shot. They might pull it off 10% of the time.
What about for the better players? Now we're talking about guys who are single digit or, you know, a 10, 11, 12 down there. They shoot in the low 80s regularly. Occasionally they'll break into 70s or even shoot in the mid 70s on a regular basis. When you take them out on an on course lesson, what do you find to be the issue?
Normally they're not too bad. Again, it just
obviously if they're playing that well,
that's
regularly.
Right. It's more when you sort of get down to that sort of number where they're shooting sort of low 80s. It's to me it's more of a technical stuff, and I'd work more of that on the range. I mean, you can take them on the golf course as well, but I find they'll get more bang for their buck if you're working on their swing or working on their short game. Normally, if they're shooting sort of high, low 80s to sort of mid 80s, their course management isn't terrible. Again, they could probably pull a few 3-woods and 5-woods instead of pulling the driver, but they're just not as, I guess, they're a bit more sensible as far as the clubs that they are pulling most of the time.
Yeah, and they probably know their distances much better.
Yeah, well, they're more consistent golfers, so they're hitting the numbers a little more consistently. But what you will find is, again, that they're always probably a lot of the time they could always take an extra club.
Yeah. Everybody can.
Yeah, well, you know, I think even with, well, I wouldn't say with the tour players, but with the amateurs, they're always under clubbing.
We're always talking about the amateurs here.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is all about the amateurs. They can go to the Golf Channel and watch the pros and the single digit guys. They can focus on that, but that's not where we are. We're talking about breaking 90 and hopefully breaking 80 sometime. I mean, that's what we're about here.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you're going to find with most of the players, you know, especially for the guys that are trying to break 90. There's a lot of simple things you can do to get better. Some of the things I'd suggest for guys is just a simple thing like an impact bag is really, really good. Even with your golf club, if you're really crazy about it, go to your local golf store, get yourself a 7-iron, maybe get a molded grip put onto it. You know, they're just really, to me, they're the only decent training aids out there that you can buy. And they're probably the oldest and the best ones.
And these are mold. You said molded grips?
Yeah, it's just like a molded grip. So if you went into a golf shop and you said, have you got any, or training grips, some people might call them, get yourself a training grip, get yourself like an impact bag. If you're at home, what you can do is throw your bag in the backyard and just push it around, make a few small swings. Just try and build up that feeling of what the correct impact position is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you find if you start pushing the bag, it's going to get your body angles better as well, your body and wrist angles. And if you can do that, and if you, you know, and also if you've got a mirror, get yourself in front of a mirror. Because what you're going to find is when you're training, when you're trying to, I always say to my students, you know, they come, we video them, we try and use some models, some other top players. And then when they go away, I always try and email their swings to them. Some pictures, and probably the last thing I say to them is get yourself in front of a mirror, right? Because what I generally try and do with a lot of guys anyways, when they come, their setups aren't very good. So I try and get them set up the correct way. And obviously when they leave, it probably feels a little foreign to some people. But it's like anything. If you do it enough, it just becomes the new normal. And if they can get themselves in front of the mirror, because you're going to find with golf, the feels are always constantly changing. But visually, it's always going to look the same, right? So if you can get the correct setup, you know, you're going to find the sequence will get better once you start trying to swing the club. So to me, the start position is the most important, because that's going to set the sequence to how everything begins. So, you know, for example, you know, if you haven't got the right body shape, I'm sort of big on trying to get people get their body angles correct at the beginning. So my preference would be trying to get people more into like an impact position at the start. Okay, so if you can get that a bit more of an impact position at the start, then all you really got to do is just pull your arms back. Fully swing your arms back, and that's going to, if you've got the right angles at the beginning, that's going to pull your body and make your body turn the right way. Okay, because the biggest thing with a lot of people is they don't start the right way, and then they're trying to turn, and then once they're trying to turn, then their body's out of position, and then they've got to somehow get back into the right position to hit it. So, you know, you've really, for the right-hander, it's going to feel like their left side's a little bit higher than their right side. And that being, you know, if you take your grip, if you've got, you know, obviously if you're a right hand, you've got your left hand on top, you've got your right hand on the bottom. So the left side's got to be a little bit higher. To me, you can't really set up in that sort of static, very straight looking bodies, which most people tend to have. You know, like we talked about at the start, you know, it's got to be a simpler way of doing it. And I just feel the way it's, the traditional way golf's taught is that it's, people have to move a lot to hit the ball. And that's why the game's so difficult, because they're trying to, because they've got to move a lot. It's very hard to coordinate it all and hit it straight.
Hmm. I'll get nasty letters if I don't ask this question. Right. We talked about your attempts and your time on various tours. What's the most amount of success that you had? How did you do?
Well, you know, I didn't really have a lot of success on the main tours. You know, I played most of the major events in Australia. I think I made one cut down there. I played a lot on the secondary tours, and in Australia have pro-am tours as well. You know, I probably won about, I don't know, 8 or 10 events on the secondary tour with the pro-ams. You know, I mean, I love playing golf, and, you know, I probably, like most instructors, we're all failed players. You know, we all got into golf and we wanted to be tour pros, but there's only a very small percentage of guys that actually, probably 2 or 3% of guys that make a living out of it.
And even for somebody with that kind of game and that kind of confidence, you still struggle to make the cut?
Yeah, well, with golf, I mean, you know, the thing, when I was playing in the mid-90s to sort of the early 2000s, and we'd play like the Australian Open and Greg Norman would be there, or, you know, obviously there's a lot of top Australian players that now play on the PGA Tour, and those guys would play all year on the Nationwide Tour, or now it's the Web.com Tour, or the PGA Tour, and you know they're probably playing 20 to 30 weeks a year, and then you're coming back and they're playing the Australian Tour, and you know they might come down and play 3 or 4 events, and if you play well enough, you might get a chance to play 4 or 5 events throughout the Australian summer, and it's pretty hard to compete with those guys if they're playing every week 4-round tournaments. You're just playing 1 2-day events. But, you know, when you get to those televised events, the big thing I think the amateurs don't realize is how much tougher the golf courses play. They play a lot firmer. They play a lot faster. The rough's a lot deeper. You know, you're going to find that if you're off a little bit, everything gets amplified, right? Whereas if we went out and played here today or at Peacock Gap, you're going to find the conditions are a lot softer. The greens are probably a lot slower than what they would be if you're playing a tour event on TV. So, you know, you find if you hit a stray shot, you tend to get penalized a lot more for it.
Mm. Fascinating. I love it. Well, listen, I got to make a couple of announcements. And when we come back, can you give us one tip?
Sure, I got one for you.
Oh, for those of you down under, you're welcome. This may be one of the few episodes that you're saying to yourself, thanks, Fred. I can understand that guy. If you missed last week's announcement, let me remind you that we are phasing out members-only program for premium access. You may have heard me say Golf Smarter Premium at the head of the show. Well, we now offer you more choices for you to take advantage of getting these complete episodes each week. So you're aware, those who are not members or premium access subscribers, this week's episode is less than 10 minutes. They missed a lot. Our premium access subscriptions are now available for just 1 month, 6 months, or for your best value, get a full 12 months for less than a weekend round. And whether you sign up for the 1 month or the 12 months, you get the same benefits across the board. Open premium access on our new free Golf Smarter app, and every single episode since 2005 will stream directly to your phone or tablet when you choose to, and you won't have to sync to your computer. Plus, with premium access, each week, I'm going to include some of the best golf course images from my photography portfolio. You can easily use these pictures as wallpaper for your phone's home screen. I'm really excited to announce that I've just been authorized by Libsyn to provide you with this exclusive offer. We're going to give you 1 month of the premium access at no charge, plus an offer to upgrade to the 6 month subscription at 50% off. Over the next few days, your membership will be ported over to premium access in the background, and you'll have that 1 month access to premium content before you make the upgrade. I'll send out an email to our members, premium subscribers, to let you know that that has happened. For more, please check out our new podcast page at golfsmarter.libsyn.com. And of course, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the email icon on the app or on our new podcast page. Or as always, just hit that Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. Now, Josh, let's wrap it up with a helpful tip based on today's conversation.
Okay, well, Fred, a really simple tip that I would try and give people. When people are over the ball, they tend to move a lot. They tend to try and shift their weight. They just tend to over-rotate because it all feels like power. It feels like they're getting hit a long way. Simplest tip I try and give people would be to get your 7-iron, get yourself on the driving range, put your feet together, and just try and hit a few shots with your feet together. What that's going to do, it's going to synchronize everything up a little bit more. It's going to make everything work together a little bit more. As I said before, people tend to move about a lot. And when they move about a lot, it tends to make it really complicated. And it makes it hard to repeat.